We birth through Mother Sekhmetiyani at the Galactic Center. The end of time has been prophesied in many ethnic cultures for thousands of years. Last summer, August 18th, 2010, the Milky Way galaxy aligned with the sun. This marked the constellation movement of the Mayan calendar. It came sooner than the predicted December 21st, 2012. Time has speeded up due to the collective consciousness of totality and divine grace of all that is, raising their vibrations in a constant process of ascension to a level where we have surpassed the conjunct of the Milky Way with the sun. We are in the end times. It marks the end of the grand experiment of good and evil, of duality. It marks the end of the fallen angels on earth. With their removal, we will become the 33rd member of the Intergalactic Confederation of Worlds. We all have incarnated into physical bodies on Earth to change from a planet of duality to a planet of peace. We are working with the Syrian commander, Barack Obama, who is the 9th member of the Syrian Council of Nine on Sirius A. His head of secret service is a physical template of Lord Sananda, who we call King of Swords. I work for the King of Swords with millions of others in every walk of life. We are all telepathically connected and working together in as police, Interpol, government agencies, military, lawyers, judges, journalists, and many others, to list a few. Each of us play an important role where the outcome will be the capture and arrest of intergalactic war criminals, the fallen angels, who were trying to have Earth and her resources as their own, as well as tens of other planets. We are on the ground crew, all of us, and we work closely with the Galactic Federation, headed by the Admiral Lord Sananda, a higher aspect of the Prophet Jesus, also known as Yeshua, and the Captain, Lord Ashtar. They have full say in many of the aspects of this mission for Earth ascension. They work directly with President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama, as well as millions of white knights around the world. You play a big part in this as you wake up to the truth and share the news with others. We must work together to dissolve the programming from inside the matrix. As we carry out lives of service to our fellow woman, child, and man on Earth, inside the matrix, we continue to have tests and challenges. From that concept, it is affectionately known as 3D. The first dimension is a point in space. The second dimension is a plane, a flat, barren surface. The third dimension is latitude. Imagine a cube with six planes connected together, the top, bottom, and four sides. Floating up and down within this cube is third-dimensional space. The fourth dimension is time. Pure and simple, a point in space in relation to time on a timeline and a dimension. The fifth dimension is the etheric realm with no time. We exist there simultaneously now. We travel in our etheric bodies to the etheric realms at night when we sleep. Our etheric bodies are known by many names, such as our avatar body. Like Jake Sully and Neytiri, the lion woman in the movie Avatar, they are also known as our cosmic consciousness. We are multidimensional beings living on multidimensional Earth as one people, one land, one love. Welcome to the Galactic Roundtable on BBS Radio Station 2, where we will discuss all things galactic and work on our collective cosmic ascension in and with divine grace in the totality of all that is. I will be pre-recording this program every week. I will be doing it recorded, not live, because it is better for my life situation. It is also less expensive to do a program without the use of an engineer answering calls and monitoring the program. I want to thank BBS Radio, the greatest internet radio in the galaxy, for inviting me to be here each week. I invite you to become a member of the Galactic Roundtable at www.galacticroundtable.com. You may launch this radio program from there. There we will go in depth each day as a group together and keep the discussion alive. There you will find the news in the blog, our discussions on the forum, videos, articles, channelings, and new info each day. This is our family where we join to check in with each other and the current changes in Earth Ascension. I keep this site up to date every day as part of my spiritual service. I have two volunteers working to help me moderate the videos, pictures, and memberships each day. They lovingly devote their service every day, and I could not function without that help. I am grateful for all who are a part of the family at Galactic Roundtable. I managed to keep everything going with your donations, and you may find a donation button on the site. I use the money for electric, Wi-Fi, server fees, and the radio broadcast. Every little bit helps, and don't worry, we're all helping each other in this collective endeavor. I am also building my other website, www.cosmicascension.com. I continue to add features each week, and I hope you'll come there and check it out too. Thanks for being here with us tonight. Namaste.
Stones that struck you down, like rumbling at your feet, beneath the hand of love.
Hi, everybody. This is Beth. Thanks a lot for joining me tonight. I'm very excited. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the news tonight, and I would like to do a meditation and an attunement. And later, I would like to go over planetary government things. And finally, I'm going to end up with questions from Metatron. So let's get started. It's been a very hard week in the news, hasn't it, everybody? because I limit that stuff on the website. But I wanted to share it because we need to open our hearts and be reminded that the most important thing we can do right now is share the violet flame. And the more we do that, what the violet absolutely pure love. And when we do this, we're able to uncreate the miscreated energies in this on this earth plane. And the more people who do it and the more often you do it, the more it helps. It supports the people in Japan. It supports the people who are in these revolution situations. And we need more love now and more violet flame. And that was the reason why I shared that. So thank you for the ones who actually viewed it. And thank you to the ones who did not, who chose not to. And thank you, everybody, for breaking news tonight. So I want to actually read this article to you. And well, before I go to that, I guess I'll mention that what was happening in Bahrain today is that the Saudi Arabian forces have gone in there because, you know, Bahrain is this tiny little island. And Saudi Arabia, King Abdullah from Saudi Arabia would love, and his monarchy would love to have control over Bahrain. And the Bahrainians now are saying, no, thank you. We choose freedom. We want to be on our own. The other thing people don't usually know is that there are 30 naval craft. I don't know what kind, but they represent a staff of 30,000 naval command in and stationed at Bahrain. So the U.S. corporation de facto government is heavy in Bahrain, and they are in cahoots with the Saudi Arabians, and they are killing people in the streets for no reason. So please send the violet flame there. Now I'll read this article to you, and I'll post this on Galactic Roundtable in a little bit. This is breaking news. UN chief calls for ceasefire in Libya. Ban Ki-moon calls for immediate ceasefire as Security Council meets to deliberate over draft resolution. Gaddafi's forces have retaken some of the key towns that have fallen to pro-democracy activists. Ban Ki-moon, the UN Security General, has called on both sides in the conflict in Libya to accept an immediate ceasefire even as deliberations began at the United Nations Security Council over a draft resolution regarding the crisis. Ban warned that a campaign by pro-Gaddafi forces to bombard such an urban center as opposition stronghold Benghazi would massively place civilians' lives at risk. He said he was gravely concerned about the increasing military escalation by government forces, which include indications of an assault on Benghazi. Those responsible for the continuous use of military forces against civilians will be held accountable, he said. No-fly zone debate. The UN Security Council resumed discussions on Wednesday on a resolution seeking to impose a no-fly zone over Libya in a bid to stop Gaddafi's fighter jets from targeting civilians. Al Jazeera's Scott Heidler, reporting from New York, said it would take the 15-member council some time to conclude debate on the resolution. There are certain paragraphs, certain points, with this draft resolution that are going to be more sticky than others, if you will, he said. And that's specifically when it comes to the no-fly zone. How it is going to be implemented. There's a term, by all means necessary, that's quite ambiguous. And also, it can have a lot of military implications. That's most likely going to be one of those paragraphs that's going to take some time to get through. It sounds like they're buying time to me, doesn't it, everybody? They're waiting for Gaddafi to just step down. Nobody wants a no-fly zone who has have a mind. Hi, everybody. I'm back. I just don't have the connectivity yet in this new place where I am. We're going to keep going on the phone. I hope it sounds okay. I don't think we'll have any problems. So if you don't know, Saif al-Islam is Muammar Gaddafi's son, and he's a tyrannical guy. So the article says, meanwhile, Saif al-Islam, Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi's son, has said forces loyal to his father are nearing the rebel stronghold of Benghazi in the country's east, and predicted an uprising against the regime would be crushed within the next 2 days. Saif al-Islam told France-based TV channel Euronews on Wednesday, "The military operations are finished. In 48 hours, everything will be over. Our forces are close to Benghazi. Whatever decision is taken, it will be too late." He was responding to questions about talks among world powers to impose a no-fly zone over Libya, a move endorsed by the 22-member Arab League last week in Cairo and backed by the United States. Now remember, everybody, when they say it's been backed by the United States, they're only talking about the State Department run by Hitler and the secret government, CIA, and they're not talking about the president. And it's those factions that have been making deals with Gaddafi all of these 40 years, right? The interview was given as Gaddafi's forces launched a major attack on the rebel-held city of Misurata, killing at least 5 people, medical sources said. Fighting was also underway in the eastern town of Adjabia on Wednesday as rebels fought back against Gaddafi troops in an effort to halt their push towards Benghazi, the opposition's stronghold. But as they had a chance to get a measure on what the rebels were able to put up in terms of a fight, they have grown increasingly certain of how they could proceed to regain the territory they lost and how they could move against them, the rebels. Stiff resistance. Al Jazeera's Tony Bertley, reporting from Benghazi, said the rebels would put up stiff resistance. I don't think there's too much nervousness, and I don't think people believe the threat at the moment appears to be real and looming, he said, adding that Benghazi would be a whole different kind of target. This is a huge city with a population of over 800,000, and the people are basically have been flying the flag of the rebellion from the very beginning. They know they have a lot to lose, so they're going to fight with every inch of the way, and street fighting would be potentially costly for Gaddafi's forces. We don't think he is that strong in terms of numbers. There's a long way to go before Benghazi falls. So the article continues, but I wanted you guys to get a taste of really what's happening in Libya tonight. And I feel that when Ban Ki-moon comes on and makes a statement, it is showing a connection, a thread between the European countries and the United States, where they're saying that, to me it sounds like they're saying they want to make a strong statement that's not coming from the President of the United States. And they're doing that by using the UN voice box. And what they're saying is, you know,
we plan to take actions, but we're going to talk about it for a few days. So this is another situation where we could really use the violet flame for peace and democracy and freedom for the people in Libya. So thank you for that. Also today, before I go into the next piece, I wanted to share a video with you from Julian Assange. And he, on live TV, basically in a kind of a town hall meeting with the Prime Minister of his home country, Australia, Julia Gillard, he accused her of treason on live TV. So I want to listen to that with you. Here you go.
Organization actions illegal, despite having swiping up.
This guy talking is a member in the audience, and it's a kind of a town hall meeting. There's a moderator, and the Prime Minister, Julia, is on the stage. So he's reading his question, and the next question that comes up will be read by Julian Assange. Here you go. Thank you.
Unable to identify any law which had actually been broken. Given the increasingly vocal support for WikiLeaks, do you now regret such comments?
I can tell. My answer is probably not going to please the audience, but let me make my attitude clear. First, I want to lay to rest one myth that's kind of got out there. We are supporting Julian Assange the same way we would support any Australian citizen who got into a legal difficulty overseas. We support people who are accused of drug trafficking. We support people who are accused of murder. Whatever view people have about those kinds of crimes, and I'm sure everybody here would say, well, drug trafficking's wrong, murder's wrong. We support Australian citizens who have got into trouble overseas. So my view about the conduct is neither here nor there in that sense. He's getting the same support someone called John Smith would get in the same situation. But I do have a view about the merit and morals of the act, and I simply don't see the moral force in it. I have got a lot of respect for people who whistleblow. I know enough about American history to know the history of Watergate and Deep Throat did the right thing getting that information into the public domain. There are people who have worked for Big Tobacco who have got information into the public domain, being whistleblowers, they've acted for a moral purpose. I respect that. At the centre of WikiLeaks, I don't see that moral purpose. It's just
you didn't see any potential moral purpose in the leaked documents which showed that Middle Eastern potentates were behaving corruptly?
Well, no, in this sense, to the
because some people say that some of those issues helped lead, for example, in Tunisia to the overthrow of the government.
But what I'm going to really is Assange's motivation. And I think if your motivation, I can respect whistleblowing if your motivation is to right wrong.
So what do you think his motivation is?
His motivation, as stated, is a sort of anarchic, here it all is, just have it. And I don't have a great deal of respect for that. Now, I understand people will take different views on it, but that's the view that motivated me to make those comments.
Okay, you're watching Q&A. Remember, you can send a web or video question to our website. The address is on the screen. Find out how to do that. Well, the next question is a video question that comes from Julian Assange. He's under house arrest in England.
Prime Minister, you just got back from Washington. But what Australian citizens want to know is which country do you represent? Do you represent Australians and will you fight for Australian interests? Because it's not the first time that you or a member of your cabinet has been into a US government building and exchanged information. In fact, we have intelligence that your government has been exchanging information with foreign powers about Australian citizens working for WikiLeaks. So, Prime Minister, my question to you is this. When will you come clean about precisely what information you have supplied to foreign powers about Australian citizens working or affiliated with WikiLeaks? And if you cannot give a full and frank answer to that question, should perhaps the Australian people considered charging you with treason.
Well, of course, as Prime Minister of this country, I represent this country all day, every day. You don't have an accent like mine and get confused with being someone from another nation. So let's just put that to rest. On the exchange of information he's talking about, I honestly don't know what he is talking about. So I'm afraid I can't help him with full and frank disclosures. I don't know anything about exchanging information about people who work for WikiLeaks.
So it hasn't happened to your knowledge?
To my knowledge, it hasn't happened. But on the more broad allegations he makes about do we exchange information about Australian citizens and foreign governments, yes, we do sometimes, following up transnational crimes like people smuggling, following up transnational crimes like drug trafficking, following up transnational crimes like terrorism.
What about espionage, which of course is the charge the United States would like to lay at the feet of Julian Assange?
Well, Mr. Assange hasn't been charged with anything relating to WikiLeaks. He's got some legal issues relating to personal conduct questions, alleged personal conduct questions in Sweden, and no one in the United States raised with me, Mr. Assange, no one.
Okay, I mean, but you are acknowledging, and I suppose we're going to find out eventually from him. He supplies with information, I must say, to prove this, but he says he has the information. There is an intelligence sharing arrangement with the United States, as you just acknowledged. It's not inconceivable, is it, that we could have shared intelligence, Australia that is, with American security agencies about him or his colleagues in WikiLeaks?
Well, I'm not going to do hypotheticals on hypotheticals on hypotheticals. Do we exchange intelligence with the United States? Yes, we do. Part of our alliance, and it's in the best interest of this country. We are a small place. We therefore, in population terms, we therefore can't have the world's best intelligence networks. We just couldn't support them in terms of money and capacity. It's in our interest to share intelligence with a nation like the United States, which is part of our defence arrangements with them. And so it should be.
All right, we've got a web question on this subject. It's from Ning Lutris in Melbourne. American politicians have called for the execution of Australian citizen Julian Assange. Will you guarantee that Mr. Assange will not be extradited to the US, where he may face espionage charges and the death penalty?
Well, once again, we're doing hypotheticals on hypotheticals here, but policy-wise, we do not extradite people subject to the death penalty. So it's not a question of Mr. Assange or not Mr. Assange. That's Australia.
Okay, very interesting. Some of you I know have heard that, but many have not. So, I want to talk a little bit about what's happening in Japan. There have been at least two channel messages posted on Galactic Roundtable saying they thought the Illuminati had, you know, gotten out their harp machines and made this earthquake. And I stood, you know, with a strong opinion that that was not at all true. And that's because I know about the level of presence of the Galactic Federation on Earth at this moment. And also because the day before the earthquake, I had been to see Commander Soltek and Commander Salvington on Soltek's ship, the Phoenix, and I saw them doing these, beaming these cosmic energies to Earth to help Earth's ascension. So the next day when the earthquake happened, I was stunned and hurting for all the people there, and I knew that it was a part of Earth's ascension and had nothing at all to do with fake machines. And Rama came out with a statement today on his website, 2013rainbowroundtable.com, and he said that he's hearing this was not man-made, that that's no longer being allowed on Earth, and nothing of this magnitude is being allowed. It was just as I had said.
And he said that Ashtar had said, the time for peace is now, and Ashtar is not in a bargaining mood. So I was very happy to see that. I got in my email, and I'm sorry I forgot who sent this to me, and I thank you. Today, a wonderful letter from Sendai, Japan, from a lady who went through the earthquake, and I'd like to share that with you. It is a little bit of a shining light inside this tragic situation. The other wonderful thing I'm seeing come out of this is I was hearing Dennis Kucinich, and he was speaking on how in the U.S., and I read an article about this, the same thing has happened in the U.K., they're reviewing the safety of all nuclear power plants in both countries, and they will not allow any plant that is non-compliant with safety checks to continue without proper updates. And this has really awakened everybody to, a subject that we didn't talk about very much. Not since the 70s. So that has been something positive. And now let me share this letter with you. Let me have a sip of water first. Things here in Sendai have been rather surreal, but I am very blessed to have wonderful friends who are helping me a lot. Since my shack is even more worthy of that name, I am now staying at a friend's home. We share supplies like water, food, and kerosene heater. We sleep lined up in one room, eat by candlelight, share stories. It is warm, friendly, and beautiful. During the day, we help each other clean up the mess in our home. People sit in their cars, looking at news on their navigation screens, or line up to get drinking water from a source when a source is open. If someone has water running in their home, they put out a sign so people can come to fill up their jugs and buckets. It's utterly amazing that where I am, there has been no looting, no pushing in lines. People leave their front door open as it is safer when an earthquake strikes. People keep saying, oh, this is how it used to be in the old days when everyone helped one another. Quakes keep coming. Last night, they struck about every 15 minutes. Sirens are constant, and helicopters pass overhead often. We got water for a few hours in our homes last night, and now it is for half a day. Electricity came on this afternoon. Gas has not yet come on, but all of this is by area. Some people have these things, others do not. One has washed for several days. We feel grubby, but there are so many more important concerns than that for us now. I love this peeling away of non-essentials, living fully on the level of instinct, of intuition, of caring, of what is needed for survival, not just of me, but the entire group. There are strange parallel universes happening. Houses a mess in some places, yet then a house with futons or laundry out drying in the sun. People lining up for water and food, and yet a few people out walking their dogs, all happening at the same time. Wow, have you ever heard of the separation of worlds, everybody? Wow. Other unexpected touches of beauty are first, the silence at night, no cars, no one out on the streets, and the heavens at night are scattered with stars. I usually can see about two, but now the whole sky is filled. Yeah, because the lights got shut off. The mountains are Sendai, are solid, and with the crisp air, we can see them silhouetted against the sky magnificently. And the Japanese themselves are so wonderful. I come back to my shack to check on it each day. Now, to send this email since the electricity is on, and I find food and water left in my entranceway, I have no idea from whom, but it is there. Old men in green hats go from door to door checking to see if everyone is okay. People talk to complete strangers, asking if they need help. I see no signs of fear. Resignation, yes, but Fear or panic? No. They tell us we can expect aftershocks and even other major quakes for another month or more. And we are getting constant tremors, rolls, shaking, rumbling. I am blessed in that I live in a part of Sendai that is a bit elevated, a bit more solid than the other parts. So far this area is better off than others. Last night my friend's husband came in from the country bringing food and water, blessed again. Somehow at this time I realized from direct experience that there is indeed an enormous cosmic evolutionary step that is occurring all over the world right at this moment. And somehow, as I experience the events happening now in Japan, I can feel my heart opening very wide. My brother asked me if I felt so small because of all that is happening. I don't. Rather, I feel as part of something happening much larger than myself. This wave of birthing worldwide is hard and yet magnificent. Thank you again for your care and love of me. With love in return to you all, Anne. Really beautiful. Really nice. I wanted to share that because there's so many other things coming from there that's the human dimension. So what I'd like to do, everybody, I've pulled a really precious guided meditation for you tonight, and it's a gift for you, and it will lift you up and help you as you continue to be the light for everybody else, sending out your love and your violet flame. So this meditation is, it's not about healing the earth. It's not about, we're not going to do projections. It's a rest. It's a gift. It's something for you to receive to replenish you. And so what I want to do is start out with a very sweet song, and then we'll go into a guided meditation. This meditation was channeled through Carolyn Ann O'Reilly, and her meditations are fantastic. I've been reading her for many years, probably 8 or 9 years. And so this came out on March 2nd, or March 1st. I planned to share it with you before, but I wasn't able to go on the radio. So I want to do this tonight. And while we're doing this guided meditation that I'm going to read to you, then I'm also going to do an attunement to the energies of Venus. That's what I would like you to focus on. I'd like you to receive the loving energy of the Kumaras while we're doing this meditation. So this guided meditation features Archangel Michael, and I think you'll like it very much. So we're going to start with a song to help us disconnect from the news and segue into relaxing to go into meditation. Thank you. Here we go. Oh,
Okay, everybody, wonderful. I'm glad you're rested and relaxed now. Slow down your breathing. Right now I'm going to connect with the Venus energy, and I will also connect with the Mothership in New Jerusalem that helps carry the energy farther. So we beam in from Venus into our heart. And if you're very sensitive, you may feel something. Now I'm going to read this guided meditation to you, a gift from Archangel Michael. Just a minute, I'm going to take some water. Greetings and welcome, my beautiful beings of light. Your physical smiles are a little pensive, but the sparkle in your eyes relays that your souls are witnessing the evolution of the earth plane. My beloved, before you incarnated into this physical life form, you each stood in line and volunteered to watch the events as they are unfolding. So much is happening right now, my divine beings of light, that it is probably very difficult to get your arms around all that is occurring on the earth plane at any given moment in now. It is kind of like watching a 10-ring circus, is it not? Where you don't know where to look first. You are just on continual overwhelm. These things have been in the making for so very, very long, my beloved. Of course, the divine master blueprint has changed continually from its initial total destruction of the earth plane. The continual change in mass consciousness towards love has superseded the original scenario into what you are now viewing. You, my beautiful beings of grace, are to be saints,
and commended for working so diligently to assist in this outcome revision. You are succeeding in reintroducing love where it once was thought to be a failed, uncaring society. This is a job well done. My beautiful beings of grace, job well done. Thank you. My divine beings of love, the Creator is gifting you within the now with a beautiful pink diamond to add to your spiritual heart chakra. Close your eyes and confirm, please, that you will accept this most precious gift from the Creator. To confirm acceptance, simply in your imagination, see the Creator personally placing this most precious pink diamond within your spiritual heart chakra. The Creator is placing it right next to the white diamonds and other jewels that you have been adding for a while. See how all of these lovely jewels gleam and glow, illuminated by the candle that is also burning there. This pink diamond is the unending divine love that you have brought from the heavenly realm and placed into this earth plane with your divine presence. It is beginning now to flourish and expand exponentially as you all expand and evolve upward. Feel this beautiful pink diamond start to pulsate as the Creator so gently places it into its cherished position within your spiritual heart chakra. Perhaps you might feel a warm glow starting to wash over you when it is in place. You may feel the Creator's love wrap around you in a spiritual, etheric hug. This hug is one of those long, deep hugs that lets you know how much you are truly loved. It will make you instantly think of home as you smile and hug the Creator back in return. Whenever you feel overwhelmed or challenged at any time, simply reflect back in your imagination to this hug exchange to experience this etheric, never-ending hug all over again. It is the hug that keeps on giving, just like the Energizer Bunny character in the commercial you love so much on TV. This hug is revitalizing, always there and available for you whenever you need it. Please utilize it and share it with others as well. Each one of you needs more daily hugs than you are allowing yourselves to experience. Give yourselves permission to hug others and be hugged. Since you are on the physical to experience physicality, this is just one more manifestation of love that you can share. This tells another that you honor their light within as they honor your light in return. Another facet of this beautiful pink diamond is that you may share it with others. And the more you share it, the larger the pink diamond grows within your own spiritual heart chakra. Share it with all the new babies coming into the world, with those you love, and even with those you do not. This pink diamond is very special, as it will only vibrate love. Its love energy can never be requalified into anything else but love. Let's say you share it, my beloveds, with someone that has never known love. guess what? It starts the love vibration within that person's energy field. Their vibration begins to rise, and they can now see things in a different perspective than before the love energy was introduced. What a special gift this is to humanity. Please share it. Remember, love is the one thing that can be shared and never violates another's free will choice. Allow this messenger to take you on a meditation journey. Arrange yourself in your chair or lie on a bed so that you are comfortable. Keep your legs and arms from crossing if at all possible. Cover yourself with a light blanket if you chill easily. We want you comfortable and undisturbed for a while as you journey within yourself through meditation. Close your eyes and take a comfortable deep breath. Then comfortably exhale as deep as is possible. With each breath in, you are breathing in love. With each out breath, you are breathing out fear and doubt. Take another comfortable deep breath in. Comfortably exhale, just letting all the stress go. Take another comfortable deep breath in. And just exhaling, let it all go with a sigh as you are breathing out all frustrations of the day. Feel your body relaxing from your toes to the top of your head. Give yourself permission to feel the calm and peace. Your muscles are feeling loose and limp, so relaxed, so deliciously serene, so wonderfully lazy. Direct your ego self to perch on your left shoulder. Instruct your ego self that it is only to be an observer on this journey. It is not to participate. If it helps you to visualize by identifying your ego with a symbol or as an object, please do so. In your imagination, ask through prayer for the Creator to send you down a protective ray of white light by praying mentally something like this. My Creator, I am asking for a protective ray of white light to unfold me and lift me up so I am experiencing the very highest of vibrations during this journey into my innermost depths of understanding and being. I am protecting myself, my Creator, from anything that is not for my highest good on this journey. I am thanking you, my Creator, for assisting me by sending this ray. I am visualizing the ray in my imagination now coming down through the corner of the area where I am meditating. It is entering into my physical form, permeating all that is within my I am presence. The Creator has responded to your prayer and has gifted you with an iridescent white ray plus two pink pearlescent rays for this journey. The rays are entering into your body through the soles of your feet and moving up through your physical vessel, permeating throughout all of your etheric energy fields and physical vessel and into all corners of the actual area that you are meditating in. Then the rays are exiting through your crown chakra. The rays are returning to the Creator and cycling back down through you again and back to the Creator in a continuous circular loop. These protective therapeutic rays are in a continuous circular motion while you are in meditation. You are now divinely protected at this moment, and nothing can even communicate with you that is not for your highest good without your permission. My divine beings of light, you are breathing very slowly and evenly now. You are feeling secure and safe. Breathe in deeply, my beautiful beings of light, and feel the lighter, relaxed feelings of being protected and divinely guided into this meditation. Breathe in deeply and know that you are breathing to the pulse of the Creator. Listen to the Creator's spiritual heartbeat and feel the unconditional love that courses through you each time you think about this moment. Breathe in deeply, allowing the seeing within your spiritual imagination. Your guardian angels and invited spiritual guides as they join you. The angels take your etheric essence hand and guide you out of your physical body and directs you into the etheric spiritual heart chakra. An angel has been stationed to stay with your physical essence until you return from your meditation journey. You are seeing, feeling, and sensing this within your imagination. Your guardian angels, spirit guides, and special invited guests are now within your spiritual heart chakra with you. Your angels and guides are helping you locate the golden door that says, "To my highest guidance within." You turn the etheric spiritual doorknob and cross over the threshold, knowing that you are on a spiritual growth adventure. You find yourself in a white marble corridor. Your angels take a quick look at your eyes. They determine that you appear particularly tired and dragged down today. They whisk you down the hall to the last door on your right. The door has no label, but as you open it, you notice that you are entering a meadow valley that lies beneath your crystal palace. You see the mountain in front of you, along with your crystal palace sparkling off in the distance. A pink cloud has been sent to take you to your garden of serenity and your crystal palace. Your angels instruct you to simply sit cross-legged on a cloud that is hovering close to the ground where you are standing. You walk around the cloud first just to make sure that this cloud conveyance feels safe for you. You notice that as you look at the front of the cloud, that there is a warm face on the cloud with the most welcoming smile. You greet the cloud and thank it for taking you on your journey today. The cloud responds back that its name is Mary, and it is a pleasure to be of service to you today. Feeling safe now, having met the cloud, you hop on Mary's cloud cushions, sitting with your legs crossed as she whizzes off toward the mountaintop. Mary arrives in your garden of serenity very quickly and hovers just above the grass next to the path to your crystal palace. You untwine your legs and hop off the cloud. You thank Mary for the ride. Mary tells you that she will be waiting to take you back when you are finished with your adventure. You nod and begin walking on the path. There on the path, you meet Bob, one of your white unicorns, and the two of you, along with all of your invited guests, angels, and guides, walk to your crystal palace. Bob fills you in on the new animals and plants that have been popping up in the garden since your last visit. You smile and nod your head as you didn't realize how busy you had been in your sleep state in creating all these new additions to your garden of serenity. Your angels tell you that Bob will wait for you here as you have reached the Crystal Palace's golden door. This is the golden door that has all of your previous incarnated names inscribed upon it. Let's see if you can recognize any new ones this time. Remember, the names could be in symbol form or light form or sound form, along with foreign languages. As always, don't fret if you can't see any other name but the one you presently hold, as these remembrances will surface only when you are ready to receive them. Other opportunities will always come up to allow you to view the door again. Satisfied with your name search, you turn the doorknob and cross over the threshold. You notice your wonderful colored dot friends are all there on the entrance foyer's floor. The colored dots are being created by the reflected light spiraling down through the crystal spires above. You step in each colored dot and greet each color. You always enjoy this part so much. You kind of feel like a kid playing hopscotch on a sidewalk as you jump from one colored circle to the next. Each one greets you and passes on a message for you. You've reached the last dot and it puts you right at the end of the foyer, where a large doorway opens off to your left into the grand circular room. You notice, as usual, that there is massive construction going on in the palace, and your angels remind you that you are always under construction. They tell you that you are evolving very quickly now, so expect more construction each time you visit going forward. Your spiritual ears are picking up the notes of your very own song as you enter the grand circular room. You turn toward the direction of that the music is emanating from. You see that the music is coming from the first door of the circular room configuration. The room belongs to the Creator, and the door is open, allowing the music to stream out. The Creator's energy glow is pouring out of the room, as well filling up the entire circular area with the Creator's energy brilliance. Your angels tell you that the Creator is expecting you today. You walk up to the Creator's door and feel the Creator's presence so strongly. It is like being wrapped in a warm, never-ending embrace of the purest love that you could ever experience on any plane. You step into the room, and the Creator greets you so warmly with the most wonderful etheric hum. You see in the center of the room a small table where a gleaming pink diamond sits awaiting your arrival. The Creator guides you over to the table and asks if this pink diamond can be placed within your spiritual heart chakra. You are so excited to receive this beautiful gift and grant permission for the Creator to place it there. The Creator picks up the pink diamond and places it directly in your spiritual heart chakra. You feel it begin to pulse, and this most glorious, warm feeling of pure love washes over you. The Creator tells you that this stone is very important because it expands exponentially as you yourself gift it to another. It is always best to ask the other person's higher self for permission to share the gift with them, however. The Creator explains that all you have to do is intent to share it with another, and through your spiritual vision, using your imagination, take your etheric hand and place it within your own spiritual heart chakra, and simply remove a tiny piece of the pink diamond. Then take the tiny piece and place it into another's spiritual heart chakra. You nod and understand the instruction. You realize that this is going to be a very powerful tool to assist mass consciousness to elevate its vibration even further. this wonderful jewel will be well shared, you tell the Creator. The Creator asks if you would like to dance just a few rounds on a dance floor before you have to return. You tell the Creator yes, and you find yourself whirling and twirling together on the dance floor to your song. You think back as you dance to the most precious moments that you can bring forth to remember about your life between lives. Those most revered moments always were you dancing with the Creator. There is simply nothing like it, you tell yourself. The Creator is hearing your thoughts and tells you that dancing with each of you is the most divinely special activity that the Creator enjoys. That blending and connectedness is highest within the dancing moment, and it is something that is cherished throughout infinity. After a few more waltzing rounds on the floor, the whirling slows and stops. The Creator hugs you one more time and then releases you. You are feeling reluctant to leave, but you know it is time to return, to share your beautiful gift of the pink diamond with as many possible on the earth plane. You wave and tell the Creator, until next time, as you turn and exit out the door of the Creator's room. Walking back out into the grand circular room, your angels guide you back to the entrance corridor. You tell the colored dots on the entrance foyer floor that you will visit them again in a while. The angels turn the knob on the golden entrance door, opening it for you as you walk across the entrance threshold back outside, where you see Bob waiting on you. Bob sees your beaming face and can tell that you've been dancing with the Creator again. Bob tells you that you look refreshed and energized. You thank Bob as you walk back down the path to Mary, the cloud, and she's waiting to return you to your meadow door. Bob tells you a few very funny jokes. His unicorn humor is so refreshing. You always enjoy visiting and catching up with Bob. You are now approaching Mary and see that she has been talking with some of your guides and angels that were waiting with her. She greets you as you sit back down on your cloud cushions, cross your legs, and away Mary goes. In no time, she has returned you to the meadow door. You dismount and thank her for helping you today. She tells you that perhaps she will see you again very soon and takes off again to be with the others in her cloud group. Your angels hold the door as you cross back over the threshold that leads you back into the hall. You instantly find yourself back in the white marble corridor. You catch a glimpse of your glowing essence in the mirror. Your angels lead you back across the threshold of the golden door, back into your spiritual heart chakra, and then they assist the return of your spiritual essence back into your physical form. Wiggle your fingers and toes, and when you are ready, open your eyes. Go about your day remembering your inner higher wisdom, and angelic support staff are always at your service working with you to help you reach your highest, most appropriate potential. Beloveds, you are blessed beyond words and loved beyond measure, more than any earth plane language can ever express. I am Archangel Michael, the Creator's messenger of joy, love, wisdom, light, peace, and grace. Thank you, everybody. Again, that was written by Carolyn Ann O'Reilly. Great meditation. Just take a few breaths and come back. I would like to share a piece on world government now, and this is kind of deep. It will take me a little bit to share it with you. It's 10 pages, and so I designed it so that you would have the meditation first and be relaxed and be in the mood to be passive and hear this next piece. This was written by the researcher for the Aboriginal Moldite Nation, and her name is Forestine McGinnis. And as soon as I can, I will connect with her, and we will do an interview and share it with you here. Everyone has asked me, okay, so when you become sovereign, then what happens? And when the United States Corporation, the de facto government, ends, then what happens? And the answer is that we become the American Republic. And the president's role will change then. And we'll have a government that's based on following the letter of the law, common law, not statutory law. And as we move into this new space, this new government, this planetary government, this has to do with Nassara being announced and everything changing. The currencies will change. Everything will be revalued. Everyone will start out fresh and have reparations. Schools and hospitals and houses for everyone. Food and clean water will be immediate. Forestine McGinnis has researched and written for us what we need to take the next steps to planetary government. It may be the most important document that's ever been written. And that's why I want to read it to you. So if you can relax and listen, and it will help you understand how important this is. I think you will really enjoy it. I'm just going to take some water and then we'll read it. Thank you. I, Forestine McGinnis, invoke the great universal spirit to bear witness to this undertaking of researching and compiling the following document. I pray that you will intercede on my behalf for the third hierarchy of angels, principalities, specifically SADC, and grant them authorization to direct and guide me in this endeavor. I pray that all information imparted to me and contained in the foregoing document will be sanctioned by the host for the cause, which is this project is undertaken, and that success will be forthcoming. So mote it be, and so it is. Proposed amendment to the Constitution of the United States, Joint Resolution, H.J. Res 27, resolved by the Senate and the House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress, assembled 2/3 of each House concurring therein, that the following article is hereby proposed as an amendment to the Constitution, which shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of the Constitution when ratified by the legislatures of 3/4 of the several states. Article, Section 1. No person shall be elected to the office of president more than twice, and no person who has held the office of president or acted as president for more than 2 years of a term shall be elected to the office more than once. Section 2. This article shall be inoperative unless it shall have been ratified as an amendment to the Constitution by the legislatures of 3/4 of the several states within 7 years from the date of this submission to the states by Congress.
Article 5 of the United States Constitution stipulates the method whereby the Constitution may be altered. Whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or, on the application of the legislature of two-thirds of several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which, in either case, shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution, when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states, or by convention in three-fourths thereof, as one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by Congress. Early in the Constitutional Convention of 1787, George Mason of Virginia, one of the co-authors of the Virginia Bill of Rights, suggested that inclusion in the Constitution specified mechanism for future amendments would help channel real for change into settled constitutional processes. Amendments, therefore, will be necessary, and it will be better to provide for them in an easy, regular, and constitutional way than to trust to chance and violence. So viewed, the Article 5 amendment process is a somewhat conservative rendering of the revolutionary spirit that had claimed for the people an inalienable right to alter or abolish an inadequate government. The 20th century produced 6 of the 26 amendments. The 20th amendment, which limits the lame duck sessions of Congress, in 1933. The 21st Amendment, which repealed the prohibition in 1933. The 22nd Amendment, which prescribes presidential term limits in 1951. The 23rd gave the District of Columbia 3 electoral votes in presidential elections in 1961. The 24th abolished the poll tax for federal elections in 1964. The 25th provided rules for presidential disability and succession in 1967. And the 26th lowered the voting age to 18 for both state and federal elections. To ensure that the full range of future constitutional changes would be a viable possibility, the framers sought to provide some means of constitutional change free of the control of existing governmental institutions. They included alternative mechanisms both for proposing and for ratifying amendments. Mr. Mason argued, no amendment of the proper kind would ever be obtained by the people if the government should become oppressive. The solution to this dilemma was the Convention of the People. The final version of Article 5 provides that Congress must call a convention for proposing amendments whenever two-thirds of state legislatures apply for one. After the convention closed, resistance to open-ended service persisted, as some critics voiced concern of the re-eligible president who would endanger the public liberty. Federalist number 69, Mr. Alexander Hamilton, elaborated how the Constitution was premised on a re-eligible executive with democratic checks to counter the threat of a tyrannical president or a servile president continually installed by a domineering Congress in elections thrown to the House. The President, Hamilton explained, is to be elected for 4 years and is to be re-eligible as often as the people of the United States shall think him worthy of their confidence. In the 18th century, the Convention of the People was a familiar device, which now seems archaic, and the use of either a national convention for proposing amendments or state convention for ratification at present are fraught with uncertainties. The convention device was an imaginative effort to address a universal problem of constitution drafting, how to provide the means for future reform of governmental institutions when the only institutions readily available for proposing and approving changes are those already in existence and possibly in need of reform themselves. Source, Amending the Constitution by Walter Dillinger. In 1940, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt became a candidate for the office of president for a third time. After he was elected to a fourth term, he died before completing it. Hence, the following constitutional amendment was introduced to limit the terms of president. Constitutional Amendment. On January 3, 1947, the first day of the first session of the 80th Congress, House Judiciary Chairman Earl C. Michener and the Speaker of the House, Joseph Martin, introduced a presidential term limit amendment. House Joint Resolution 27 was referred to the House Judiciary Committee as originally written, specified that no person shall be chosen or serve as President of the United States for any term or be eligible to hold the office of the President during any term if such person shall have heretofore served as President during the whole or any part of each of any two terms. The proposal was modified by the House Judiciary Committee, which reported H.J. Resolution 27 to the full House on February 5th with the following revision, replacing the language above. Any person who has served as President of the United States during all or portions of any two terms shall thereafter be ineligible to hold the office of President. On February 6th, H.J. 27 was brought to the floor under a rule allowing only 2 hours of debate, which Democratic opponents of the measure decried as being inappropriately restrictive for a proposed amendment to the Constitution. On March 12th, Senator Robert Taft's amendment provided that no person shall be elected to the office of the president more than twice, and no person who has held the office of president or acted as president for more than 2 years of the term to which some other person was elected president, shall be elected to the office of president more than once. Within 2 months of its introduction to the House, the 22nd Amendment had been presented to the states. By the end of the year, 18 state legislatures ratified the measure. After the first wave of support, the ratification proceeded very slowly, and it was not until 1951 that they required two-thirds of the states approved the proposed amendment. As Republican James Davis explained, the 22nd Amendment was ratified because of the determination of Southerners and Republicans not to see a repeat performance of four successive presidential victories by another FDR-type candidate. Presidential protests to repeal the amendment. In 1959, the House and Senate held hearings on the amendment, and former President Truman appeared before the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on Constitutional Amendments to criticize the amendment and urge its repeal. The amendment, according to Truman, was unwisely passed by Roosevelt haters and made a lame duck out of every second-term president for all time in the future. He added, "This puts the president in the hardest job in the world, with one hand tied behind his back." In September 1959, the subcommittee approved a repeal resolution, but the movement quickly lost momentum. In March 1973, Project for Peace, Incorporated, a New York advertising agency, was hired by a voters' organization, Citizens for Nixon of 76, seeking repeal of the 22nd Amendment. But as revelations about the president's involvement in the Watergate scandal became public, the movement quickly ebbed. In September 1985, Reagan told a group of conservative state legislatures that it was ridiculous to prevent voters from sending presidents to that office for more than two terms. In February 1986, during an interview, the president indicated that while no president should advocate the repeal of the amendment in the future, we ought to take a serious look and see if we haven't interfered with the democratic rights of the people by limiting their ability to choose a president. In 1986, then-chairman of the National Republic Congressional Committee, Guy Vander Jet, introduced a joint resolution calling for the repeal of the amendment. Although the measure obtained 65 co-sponsors, support for a third Reagan term waned after revelations about the Iran-Contra affair. Source, Twice and Future Presidents by Bruce Peabody and Scott Gantz, Minnesota Law Review, 83, Min L. Rev. 565. Codification of the Amendment. H.R. 6412, P.L. 771, 62, Statute 672, Chapter 644, June 25, 1948. To codify and enact into law Title III of the United States Code, the President. Be it enacted by the Senate and the House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, that Title III of the United States Code, entitled the President, is codified and enacted into positive law and may be cited as follows. Chapter 1. Presidential Elections and Vacancies. Section 1. The electors of President and Vice President shall be appointed in each state on the Tuesday next after the first Monday in November in every fourth year succeeding every election of a President and a Vice President. Section 2. Whenever any state has held an election for the purpose of choosing electors and have failed to make a choice on the day prescribed by law, the electors may be appointed on a subsequent day in such a manner as the legislature of such state may direct. Title III United States Code Annotated, USCA, Historical and Statutory Note, 1948, Act SR 1623, June 25, 1948, Chapter 644, 62, Statute 676, September 3, 1954, Statute 1227, Title III, USCA, Section 19, Historical and Statutory Notes, June 25, 1948, September 9, 1965, Publication L, 89-174, Section 6A of 79, Statute 669, October 15, 1966, Pub L 89670, Section 10, APL 89174, HR 6927, an act to establish a Department of Housing and Urban Development and for other purposes. Section 5, Conforming Amendments, Section 19, D1 of the Title of III. The Title III of the United States Code is hereby amended by striking out the period at the end thereof and inserting a comma and the following. Secretary of Health, comma, Education and Welfare, comma, Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. PL 89670, HR 15963, an act to establish a Department of Transportation and for other purposes. Section 10, Sealing and Endorsing Certificate. The electors shall seal up the certificates so made by them and certify upon each that the list of all votes of such state given for president and of all other votes given for vice president are contained therein. Legislative history and intent. There are well-developed arguments outlining the perils of divining and applying legislative intent when interpreting statutes. These arguments seem no less telling than interpreting a measure ultimately adopted as a constitutional amendment. In the context of the amendment process, the problem of ascertaining legislative intent may be magnified by the abundance of state legislature interpreters who have the opportunity to assess, debate, support, or reject the proposed measure. The views of Congress in debating the proposed amendment and the views of the people who ratified the amendment. Interpreting the legislative intent behind the 22nd Amendment comes with its own special set of problems. Number one, Article 5 of the Constitution grants Congress the authority to present an amendment. It also requires that a convention be convened comprising state legislatures. Under this premise, the amendment is void for failure of the Congress to comply with the constitutional process. Let me take a sip of water. Two, Article 1, Section 7. Every order, resolution, or vote to which the concurrence of the Senate or House of Representatives may be necessary shall be presented to the President of the United States, and before the same shall take effect, shall be approved by him, or being disapproved by him, shall be repassed by two-thirds of the Senate and the House of Representatives according to the rules and limitation prescribed in the case of a bill. A to A, Article 1, Section 5, CL 3. Each House shall keep a journal of its proceedings, and from time to time publish the same, excepting such parts as may, in their judgment, require secrecy, and the yeas and nays of the members of either House, or any question shall, at the desire of one-fifth of those present, be entered on the journal. Fields v. Clark, 143, U.S. 649. Mr. Justice Harlan delivered the opinion of the court. The clause of the Constitution upon which the appellates rest their contention that the act in question was never passed by Congress. Article 1, Section 5. It was assumed in argument that the object of this clause was to make the journal the best, if not conclusive, evidence upon the issue as to whether a bill was, in fact, passed by two houses of Congress. At 670. It is admitted that an enrolled act thus authenticated is insufficient evidence of itself, nothing to the contrary appearing its face, that it passed Congress. But the contention is that it cannot be regarded as a law of the United States if the journal of either house fails to show that it passed in the precise form in which it was signed by the presiding officers of the two houses and approved by the president. It is said that, under any other view, it becomes possible for the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate to impose upon the people as a law a bill that was never passed by Congress. At 672. Were it not for the somewhat peculiar provision of our Constitution, which requires that all bills, before they become laws, shall be read three several times in each house, and shall be passed by a vote of a majority of the members elect, a bill thus signed and approved would be conclusive of its validity and binding force as a law. According to the theory of our legislation, when a bill has become a law, there must be record evidence of every material requirement from its introduction until it becomes a law. At 678. In view of the express requirements of the Constitution, the correctness of this general principle cannot be doubted. There is no authority in the presiding officers of the House of Representatives and the Senate to attest by their signatures, nor in the President to approve, nor in the Secretary of State to receive and cause to be published as a legislative act, any bill not passed by Congress at 669. There are no known records which exist today that will show that H.J. Resolution 27 was ever presented to the President for his approval or disapproval, nor are there any records which show the number of people who certified the amendment. This violates the natural laws of the universe and the common law of man, as it is described in Esther 3:14. The copy of the writing of a commandment shall be given in every province and published unto all people, that they should be ready against the day. 3. Each of the 50 states has its own constitution, which is the chief charter of government and of limitations on government in that state. State constitutions offer contrast to common assumptions based only on the United States Constitution concerning both government and constitutional law. When this is done in a written constitution, the legitimacy of actions, even by the highest elected officials, depends upon compliance with the Constitution and can be challenged for failure to comply. The movement toward populist government reached its climax at the beginning of the 20th century, when many states provided for referenda on legislation and constitutional amendments upon petition by the requisite number of voters. Source: E Pluribus, Constitutional Theory and State Courts, Hans A. Munda, 1984, Georgia Law Review, 18, 165-200, Amendment 10 of the U.S. Constitution. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this Union a republican form of government and shall protect each against invasion and on application of the legislature or of the executive against domestic violence. Discussion. The original amendment originated from the House of Representatives Judiciary. The bill as codified is different from the amendment introduced. It was argued in Fields versus Clark, where a bill which passed both the House of Representatives and the Senate containing a clause which the Senate opposed and receded from their opposition only after conference ordered, and which was engrossed and presented to and signed by the President, omitting the clause upon which the controversy between the two houses took place. It renders invalid not only the omitted section, but the entire act. When a bill passed by one branch of the legislative body differs materially from the bill passed by the other branch, or when one branch wholly fails to pass it, or when the bill approved by the executive is materially different from the bill passed by the two houses, it will be held to be a nullity. Entire acts are rendered void whenever there has been a material variance between the bill passed and the bill signed and approved. The same may be said for cases with reference to their having an object or purpose not expressed in the title. Under constitutions requiring that each bill have reference to but one subject, and more are included. In all cases, the entire act has also been held void. At 651 and 652, there is a second point of view which can also be considered. The original bill states, "This article shall be inoperable unless it is ratified by an amendment to the Constitution by the legislatures of 3/4 of the several states within 7 years from the date of its submission to the States of Congress." The 1948 codification of the amendment derives from H.J. 6412 and became P.L. 771. whereas the 1947 amendment was titled H.R. 27. Historical and statutory notes found in Title 3, U.S.C. 8, after the table of contents cite the 1951 amendment as October 31, 1951. See 655, Section 5, 65, Statute 711, which substituted Administrator of General Services for Secretary of State. The historical and statutory note after Section 1 again repeats the June 25, 1954 at 62 Statute 672. However, the revision notes cite that section cites Senate Report 1623, Section, C-1948, U.S. Code, Congressional Service, page 2027. The Constitution provides the means and the mode by which an amendment to the Constitution can be introduced in the Congress, the mode to form a consensus, and the mode for ratification. The above discourse does not conform with those modes, and, therefore, the 22nd Amendment to the U.S. Constitution is not a valid amendment. Attached is a copy of a memorandum that was issued by the Commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service acknowledging that the 16th Amendment to the Constitution had not been properly ratified. The question presented was whether or not a viable avenue was available for a favorable challenge to be made in the repeal of the 22nd Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. The answer is yes. The plan. The plan shall include the repeal of the 22nd Amendment to the Constitution. The process shall be by petition, with the required number of eligible voters' signatures to place the issue on the ballot. However, the fact remains that the Corporation of the United States has been in a continued state of emergency since March 9, 1933. During this entire period of time, the U.S. Constitution has been suspended, which means that the Corporation of the United States is an illusion. It simply does not exist, and the Constitution has been voided. Under this premise, the people shall stand under the umbrella of the Declaration of Independence, certify these facts to President Obama, inform him that the people intend to repeal the amendment and establish a new form of government with him as the prince, and Michelle Robinson Obama, the princess of the nation of America. Then sang Deborah Ann Barak on that day, saying, "Praise ye the Lord for the avenging of Israel, when the people willingly offered themselves." Judges 5, 1, and 2. Prophecies, visions, and dreams are important ways of securing information. They are the ways down through history people are told or warned for the future is conveyed to them. The Bible, as it is written, is one such document and informs us of several events such as the one stated above. Since neither the Corporation of the United States nor the name America appears in the Bible, we, the people, are only left with symbolism or geography to identify America. One word in the Bible that describes America is the eagle. Through thou exalt thyself as the eagle, and through thou set thy nest among the stars. Thence will I bring thee down, said the Lord. Obadiah 4. The sun, moon, planets, and stars are the Creator's time clock as they relate to the energy that is exerted on the Earth by them. Since the eagle's nest is set among the stars, one could easily deduce that the people of America possess the capability to read the planets and determine the time in which we find ourselves at the present. The Bible has numerous passages about the sun, moon, planets, and stars. More specifically, it mentions planets by name, Jupiter and Mercury, Acts 14:12. It mentions major constellations by name, Arcturus, Job 9:9, Castor and Pollux, the twins, Acts 28:11, and Pleiades, Amos 5:8, and Job 9:9. Religious doctrine prescribes to study the phenomena is ungodly, sorcery, or witchcraft, never taking into account the same entity which created the person, created all above and below the person, before the person was created, and not recognizing the Creator's creations is equal to not recognizing the Creator. Acts 2:19 and 20. I will show wonders in the heavens above the signs in the earth beneath, blood, fire, and vapor of smoke. The sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the great and notable day of the Lord come. Attached is a photograph of perhaps the great and notable day. That event happened on August 17th, 2020. Sorry. August 17th, 2010. The alignment of the Earth's equator with the sun at the equinox causes a reduction in the Earth's magnetic field, facilitating switching channels and increasing access to higher dimensions and new information. These cosmic gateways were recognized by many ancient cultures, Chaco Canyon in the U.S., Chichen Itza in Mexico, the Mayans, the Moabites, and Stonehenge in the U.K. The Earth's magnetic field is also called the Earth's magnetic north pole. At present, the pole is located 2 degrees northeast. This location can be reached by traveling east on Interstate 90. Using a compass, it will first read northeast. As you enter the pole and pass through it, the compass will read east. This is the portal which is now open and is receiving the energy that is streaming from the galactic and supergalactic centers, hence the photograph titled Red Dawn. And the king shall do according to his will. Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers, nor the desire of the women, but shall exalt and magnify above every god, and shall prosper until the indignation be accomplished. He shall enter into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom, Moab, and the chief of the children of Ammon. Daniel 11:36 to 41. On February 18th, the moon will be both at perigee, its closest point to the earth, and at syzygy, in line with the sun and earth. This is called an eclipse, which the earth entered into on December 21st, 2010, and will culminate on February 21st. This alignment facilitates greater shifts in consciousness. Also, on the same day, the sun will be conjunct Neptune and Chiron, highlighting the need for spiritual revolution, a change of heart, as well as a change of mind. The sun, Mercury, Ceres, Mars, and Neptune are all in Aquarius, offering important keys to long-standing issues. We have passed the 11th hour. There is no going back. We are being forced to think and live out of the box. As century-old structures supporting patriarchy, materialism, and might makes right topple around us. On February 20th, Mercury and Mars will co-join Neptune at 29 degrees Aquarius. on February 22nd and 24th, they will co-join Chiron at 1 degree Pisces. This archetypical energy is associated with the Earth. The Earth has years of experience in both sustainability and innovation. What if we looked to Mother Nature for solutions? Biomimicry, called bionics in Europe, is the study and adaptation of natural processes. This is the time to mimic Mother Nature if humanity is to survive this transitional period. On February 25th, Jupiter and Pluto will make the third of five squares, bringing another wave of energy of far-reaching developments, disclosures, and assistance to the fore. The energy from this square will activate the fourth chakra, the heart, which allows us to feel our interconnectedness and equality with each other and all of creation. Humanity is currently in the process of making that dimensional shift, a shift that will illustrate the illusion of separation and encourage us to learn from the wisdom of the ages. The Earth is presently tilted toward the galactic center and supergalactic center of our Milky Way, exposing the people to energy that corresponds to the third chakra, which involves the development of personal will, authority, and right use of power. I'm for truth, no matter who tells it. I'm for justice, no matter who it's for or against. Malcolm X, 1965. Conclusion. On September 18th, 1787, the day after the delegates had put their signatures on the final draft of the Constitution, Washington wrote to Lafayette, "It is the result of our 4 months' deliberation. It is now a child of fortune, to be fostered by some and buffeted by others. What will be the general opinion of the reception of it is not for me to decide, nor shall I say anything for or against it. If it be good, I suppose it will work its own way. If bad, it will recoil on the framers." James Madison, the most responsible for the shape and substance of the Constitution, concluded, "Every word decides a question between power and liberty. For a nation so passionate about our heritage, we are surprisingly ignorant about the times, the men, and the debate that surround the foregoing of our Constitution, as well as the contents of the document itself. We Americans, celebrating its birth, would do well to reacquaint ourselves with the instrument that assures us our power. This document was researched and prepared at the February 2nd, 2011 request of Angela Germany Davis. This document was completed on February 10th, 2011 and can be distributed. The document shall be copyrighted and filed at the Aboriginal Moabite Nation Archive." Okay, everybody, I'm going to put a copy of this on the roundtable tomorrow. So you can read this at www.galacticroundtable.com. And when you do that, I want you to print it out and mail it to President Obama and Michelle, okay? I'm glad I got that out. I don't know how many of you had read that the first time through, but I can say it may be the most important document we ever have in this day and in this age. So what I want to do is shift gears a little bit. I'm going to be sharing with you the questions and answers from Metatron. And before I do that, I think we can all use a break from my voice, including me. So I'm going to share with you a short video, and I get so many questions about the dimensions. We are multidimensional beings living on a multidimensional earth, and there's so much that is not understood about that. So I have this great video that explains it better than what I've seen anywhere. So I'm going to play the video about the dimensions, and that will give me a break to have some water. And I hope you enjoy it. This is great. This is just a few minutes. Thank you.
Start with a point. Like the point we know from geometry, it has no size, no dimension. It's just an imaginary idea that indicates a position in a system. A second point, then, can be used to indicate a different position. But it, too, is of indeterminate size. To create the first dimension, all we need is a line joining any two points. A first-dimensional object has length only, no width or depth. If we now take our first-dimensional line and draw a second line crossing the first, we've entered the second dimension. The object we're representing now has a length and a width, but no depth. To help us with imagining the higher dimensions, we're going to represent our second-dimensional object as being created using a second line which branches off from the first. Now let's imagine a race of two-dimensional creatures called Flatlanders. What would it be like to be a Flatlander living in their two-dimensional world? A two-dimensional creature would have only length and width, as if they were the royalty on an impossibly flat playing card. Picture this. A Flatlander couldn't possibly have a digestive tract because the pipe from their mouth to their bottom would divide them into two pieces. And a Flatlander trying to view our three-dimensional world would only be able to perceive shapes in two-dimensional cross-sections. A balloon, for instance, which started as a tiny dot, would become a hollow circle which inexplicably grows to a certain size and shrinks back to a dot before popping out of existence. We three-dimensional human beings would seem very strange indeed to a Flatlander. Imagining the third dimension is the easiest for us, because every moment of our lives, that's what we're in. A three-dimensional object has length, width, and height. But here's another way to describe the third dimension. If we imagine an ant walking across a newspaper which is lying on a table, we can pretend that the ant is a Flatlander, walking along on a flat, two-dimensional newspaper world. If that paper is now folded in the middle, we create a way for our Flatlander ant to magically disappear from one position in his two-dimensional world and be instantly transported to another. We can imagine that we did this by taking a two-dimensional object and folding it to the dimension above, which is our third dimension. Once again, it'll be more convenient for us as we imagine the higher dimensions if we can think of the third dimension in this way. The third dimension is what you fold through to jump from one point to another in the dimension below. The first three dimensions can be described with these words: length, width, and depth. What word can we assign to the fourth dimension? One answer would be duration. If we think of ourselves as we were 1 minute ago, and then imagine ourselves as we are at this moment, the line we could draw from the 1 minute ago version to the right now version would be a line in the fourth dimension. If you were to see your body in the fourth dimension, you'd be like a long undulating snake with your embryonic self at one end and your deceased self at the other. But because we live from moment to moment in the third dimension, we're like our second dimensional Flatlanders. Just like that Flatlander can only see two-dimensional cross-sections of objects from the dimension above, we, as three-dimensional creatures, can only see three-dimensional cross-sections of our fourth-dimensional self. One of the most intriguing aspects of there being one dimension stacked on another is that down here in the dimensions below, we can be unaware of our motion in the dimensions above. Here's a simple example. If we make a Mobius strip, take a long strip of paper, add one twist to it, and tape the ends together, and draw a line down the length of it, our line will eventually be on both sides of the paper before it meets up with itself. It appears, somewhat amazingly, that the strip has only one side, so it must be a representation of a two-dimensional object. And this means for the two-dimensional flatlander, traveling down the line we just drew would end up back where they started without ever feeling like they had left the second dimension. In reality, they were just moving and twisting in the third dimension, even though it's never felt like they were traveling in a straight line. The fourth dimension, time, feels like a straight line to us, moving from the past to the future. But that straight line in the fourth dimension is, like the Mobius strip, actually twisting and turning in the dimension above. So the long undulating snake that is us will feel like it is moving in a straight line in the fourth dimension. But there will actually be, in the fifth dimension, a multitude of paths that we could branch to at any given moment. Those branches will be influenced by our own choice, chance, and the actions of others. Quantum physics tells us that the subatomic particles that make up our world are collapsed from waves of probability simply by the act of observation. In the picture we are drawing for ourselves here, we can now start to see how each of us are collapsing the indeterminate wave of probable futures contained in the fifth dimension into the fourth dimensional line that we are experiencing as time. What if you wanted to go back into your own childhood and visit yourself? We can imagine pulling the fourth dimension through the fifth, jumping back through time and space to get there. But what if you wanted to get to the world where, for example, you had created a great invention as a child that by now had made you famous and rich? We can imagine our fourth dimensional selves branching up from our current moment into the fifth dimension. But no matter where you go from here, the great child inventor timeline is not one of the available options in your current version of time. You can't get there from here, no matter how much choice, chance, and the actions of others become involved. There are only two ways you could get to that world. One would be to travel back in time, somehow trigger the events that cause you to come up with your invention, then travel forward in the fifth dimension to see one of the possible new worlds that might have resulted. But that would be taking the long way. The shortcut we could take would involve us pulling the fifth dimension through the sixth dimension, which allows us to instantly jump from our current position to a different fifth-dimensional line. In our description of the fourth dimension, we imagine taking the dimension below and conceiving of it as a single point. The fourth dimension is a line which can join the universe as it was 1 minute ago to the universe as it is right now. Or, in the biggest picture possible, we could say that the fourth dimension is a line which joins the Big Bang, one of the possible endings of our universe. Now, as we enter the seventh dimension, we're about to imagine a line which treats the entire sixth dimension as if it were a single point. To do that, we have to imagine all the possible timelines which could have started from our Big Bang, joined to all the possible endings for our universe, a concept which we often refer to as infinity, and treat them all as a single point. So for us, a point in the seventh dimension would be infinity, all possible timelines which could have or will have occurred from our Big Bang. When we describe infinity as being a point in the seventh dimension, we're only imagining part of the picture. If we're drawing a seventh dimensional line, we need to be able to imagine what a different point in the seventh dimension is going to be, because that's what our line is going to be joined to. But how can there be anything more than infinity? The answer is, there can be other completely different infinities created through initial conditions, which are different from our own Big Bang. Different initial conditions will create different universes, where the basic physical laws, such as gravity or the speed of light, are not the same as ours. And the resulting branching timelines from that universe's beginning to all its possible endings will create an infinity which is completely separate from the one which is associated with our own universe. So the line we draw in the seventh dimension will join one of those infinities to another. And as boggling as the magnitude of what we're exploring here might be, if we were to branch off from that seventh dimensional line to draw a line to yet another infinity, we'd then be entering the eighth dimension. As we've explored already, we can jump from one point in any dimension to another simply by folding it through the dimension above. If our aunt in the newspaper were a two-dimensional flatlander, then folding his two-dimensional world to the third dimension would allow him to magically disappear from one location and appear in a different one. As we're now imagining the ninth dimension, the same rules would apply. If we were to be able to instantaneously jump from one eighth-dimensional line to another, it would be because we're able to fold through the ninth dimension. The before we discuss the first dimension, we could say that we first started out with dimension zero, which is the geometrical concept of the points. A point indicates a location in a system, and each point is of indeterminate size. The first dimension then takes two of these points and joins them with a line. When we imagine the fourth dimension, it was as if we were treating the entirety of three-dimensional space in a particular state as a single point, and drawing a fourth-dimensional line to another point, representing space as it is in a different state. We often refer to the line we have just drawn as time. And in the seventh dimension, we treated all of the possible timelines which could be generated from our Big Bang as if this were a single point. And imagine drawing a line to a point representing all the possible timelines for a completely different universe. Now, as we enter the tenth dimension, we have to imagine all the possible branches for all the possible timelines of all the possible universes and treat that as a single point in the tenth dimension. So far, so good. But this is where we hit a roadblock. If we're going to imagine the tenth dimension as continuing the cycle and being a line, then we're going to have to imagine a different point that we can draw that line to. But there's no place left to go. By the time we have imagined all possible timelines for all possible universes as being a single point in the tenth dimension, it appears that our journey is done. In string theory, physicists tell us that superstrings vibrating in the tenth dimension are what create the subatomic particles which make up our universe, and all of the other possible universes as well. In other words, all possibilities are contained within the tenth dimension, which would appear to be the concept we have just built for ourselves, as we imagined the ten dimensions built one upon another.
Wow. Everybody who's listening is on a different part of their path. And some of you heard that video years ago, and you already knew that. And for some, it's a concept that's being introduced for the first time. And this is how we go out of body to the other dimensions. This is how we go to visit our home, you know, because each planet now is existing in another dimension. Jupiter right now is the closest planet in our solar system to becoming a new sun, and it's existing right now on the 13th dimension. If I remember, I think Cortan had told us that that Mars was right now on the 5th dimension. I think that's right. And I've recorded which dimensions each of these planets are on in our solar system before. I need to dig that out and put it on cosmicascension.com. I should put this video here there as well for the new ones who come along and have not heard before about multidimensionality. So as you go out of body, as you, you know, I know many of you are already doing this, but as you remember how to go out of body and travel to these places and other dimensions, it's just like what he described about this little ant walking on the line on the newspaper on the single plane, right, here on Earth. You go out of body, and then that, you know, you can bend that newspaper, the dimensions bend, and that's how your body travels and goes to the other dimension. And that's on the etheric plane. And these ships that are out there, and they are cloaked. They are operating on the etheric plane. And then when they become decloaked, they have brought themselves into physicality, just like that ant. They have traveled from the fifth dimension to the third and become a physical in this dimension. And that's how the Ascended Masters, the Alohi, the Christ of Galactics, they can at will. Archangel Michael does this all the time, so does Saint Germain, Mother Sekhmet. They show up at meetings in a physical body. And it's because they've traveled from the etheric dimension and at will taken on a physical body. and shown up. And that's how it will be when Earth comes into the fifth dimension. We will be able to go back to the third dimension anytime we want. And you can go back and forth at will. It's just as simple as sitting in your chair, closing your eyes, taking a few deep breaths, and the next thing you know, you're in another dimension. It's as easy as that. And when we talk about the separation of worlds, everybody says, how will that work? How it works is the person's physicality leaves the dimension where they are, and in moments, the physicality expresses itself on another dimension. Oftentimes, I hear people say that they have traveled into the astral realm. Well, I'd like to tell you that it is physical and etheric now. We're going from third to fifth. And when we used to talk about the astral realms, that was in the old plan before the love increased so much on Earth that place has dissolved and that place is canceled now. The astral realms are a dark place. This is a place where people would pick up possessions of dark spirits. And so when you're going into meditation, do not ask to go to the astral realm. The astral realm is a scary place. When I go there, I take Archangel Michael with me. I don't leave without him. I don't go anywhere without him, but especially not the astral realms. It's very, very dark there. So stop using that term. That place is dissolved. You don't want to go there. It was a term, you know, used loosely, and now it's carried over, but I don't suggest that you identify with that anymore. So the physical is the third dimension, and the etheric is the fifth dimension. And when we talk about the motherships of Nibiru and the New Jerusalem and the Phoenix and the Dove, those are on the fifth dimension in the etheric realm, as are all the occupants of the ships. And when I say I go to the ships, I mean that I leave my physical behind in the chair or on the sofa, and I leave the physicality and I go into the etheric realms, and I can see and hear everything that's going on there. That's how I do it. And that's what I want to share with you. And I think it was a couple of weeks ago now, I put a post on galacticroundtable.com saying my story of what's happened to me since December. It's been a very long 4 months, and we've moved to a new house, and I had an outpouring of love. And I want to take this time now and thank everybody. Your generosity exceeded my expectations, and it helped so much, and it was just what I needed. And I want to acknowledge everyone who reached out and helped me then. Thank you. And in the last 2 weeks, I thought about that a lot. And I wanted to give something back. So I have done spiritual services in the past, and it became overwhelming for me. But that was a couple of years ago, and so many things have changed since then, including my ability to handle the energy. Also, I had an augmentation last August 8th, 2010, and I am able to move energy much better now than I ever could before. So if you go to www.cosmicascension.com, I am offering services which will help anyone who partakes in going deeper with their ascension work. I had done these services with other people before. There's others doing it on the internet that are very good. And when I did it, after I had four sessions, my ability to be telepathic, my ability to remember my home, my ability to connect with the angels and the galactics grew exponentially just after 4 attunements. So I'm very good at sharing this energy. What I do is I go out of body to the place where you want an attunement from. Let's say Sirius, for example. I take myself to Sirius. I pull in the energy of that planet. That's what the augmentation was about. I pull that in through my body, and I can send it to you. And you receive the energies of Sirius into your body. It goes into your body, and it anchors into Mother Earth. And that energy exchange is very real, and most starseeds will be able to feel that energy while it's happening. I hold that energy for a half hour. It goes into your body, and what it does is it speeds up your vibration. It increases your light quotient. It increases your love quotient. It also goes into the Earth. And since you and I are sharing it between each other, it's this real exchange of energy that lifts you up, lifts the Earth up. And it makes it a very fast exchange. The energies, let's say in this example, come down from Sirius and pour into your body and wake up these centers in your brain and wake up the centers in your heart, and very quickly give you the ability with this increased energy to be able to pick up on your gifts, on your telepathy, on your inner eye vision. And if you work with it from there, and you, this is a very passive thing that you do for a half hour and you feel it, but then your body is never the same again. And after I had 4 sessions of this several years ago, then my gifts went exponential and then nothing could stop me. And so I'm offering this. I think I bring in the energies from more places than other people are doing. I'm doing Nibiru, Neptune, Saturn, Jupiter, Venus, Mars, Alpha Centauri, Aldebaran, Galactic Center, Mercury, Sirius, Arcturus, Pleiades, Vega, Orion, Uranus, Andromeda, Lyra, Ceres, the Sun, the Moon, Pluto, and Rigel. And you may not know which star will benefit you the most. And if you send me an email that you and in the subject line put star attunements, send me a note and say, Beth, I'm not sure which one. And I can tune in and figure out where your home is and offer that to you. Or you can receive the energies from, say, for an example, Nibiru, and receive Mother Sekhmet's energy, and I will channel that energy through your body for a half hour. And it so much benefits you, but not only you, but also the Earth. It lifts this dimension up every time we pour those energies in. And it's my ability to do this that is one of the things that, you know, sometimes I say I've been threatened or this or that. This is this gift that I have that they would rather not that I do this. But now we're getting to a moment in time where nothing can stop us anymore. So it's time to be doing this. And these attunements are offered, you know, in different places on the internet, but they're much more expensive than I charge $25. And that's just for an energy exchange and a half hour of my time. And that's just to pay the bills so we can keep doing this together. You know, the hosting fees and the Wi-Fi and everything that it takes me to post on the roundtable every day. And I can say that when you get an attunement, it's such a relaxing experience. You can
feel it lifting you up. You may feel your heart swirling. You may go out of your body. You may experience going out of your body for the first time, but you will definitely feel something, unless you have trouble holding the energy at that time, which may happen, and some people just go asleep. And it's still a very relaxing, rejuvenating experience. So I encourage you, I made it cheap enough that it should be within the range of most people. So I hope you will look into experiencing that. It will help everything. As I meditated and asked my guide, what can I do to give back? Then I decided to offer a galactic ascension course. And what it is that when you order the course, then I will email you the course syllabus, and it will be an individualized exchange between me and you. You will fill out questionnaires, and by doing that, we'll come to a conclusion where you are on the spiritual path, what your concerns are, what you would like to master, what you have put behind you, where you basically the essential purpose of the course is to find out, who am I? Where am I from? And what is my mission? These were the things I was hearing you wanting to know from Metatron in your Q&A. In fact, this is a spiritual question not only on Earth, but on every planet. Who am I? Where am I from? Why am I here? When we answer those questions, the answers to all of our problems are solved. There is no problem that can't be solved once those questions are answered. That's a universal truth. So this is more time intensive for me. I will offer a counsel of, you know, when you fill out the questionnaire and answer the questions, we will discuss what your goals are. And we do this through email, so you can do this from anywhere in the world. And then when we finish that, then I get a channeled bit of information based on those things that we discuss and give you that information. And then I give you exercises to do that are just for you. And the more you work with this, so the more you integrate it into your life, then you're going to see your ascension work grow exponentially. I went through this process also, and it's fantastic. It will take you leaps and bounds above. It'll take you out of your rut, you know. It'll give you a bit of direction. And included in the Galactic Ascension course is another attunement. The more attunements you do, the better. And so you can choose anyone you want. So those are the two services that I've started now on Galactic, you can get to them from galacticroundtable.com by launching from the pictures, by clicking on the picture, or please go to my other website, www.cosmicascension.com, and you can just click on the picture of that website right at the Galactic Roundtable. It'll take you right to that website. It'll take you right to cosmicascension.com. And there you will see a tab called Attunement. Just be aware that, I'm still working on the website. And I have the Star Attunements written, but they're in my files. I need to load what I've written for each one so you have a description of each area, and that will help you choose which attunement you may want, unless you want me to tune in and see which one would benefit you the most. Then I'll be adding the descriptions. It will take me another couple of days to have them all finished. I put a paragraph on some of the most popular ones just to start out, but in no means is it complete. But it will be complete in a couple of days. I just needed to get through today and get on the radio tonight, and I'm working around the clock to get these things loaded up. And this is my way of thanking you. And this is what my guide said would be helpful at this time. So I hope you will tune in, and if you feel you want to experience that, then it's available for you now. And I have my deepest gratitude and thanks for helping me over that bump. There's nothing I love more than showing up every day and posting the news that's hard to find and talking about how our world is changing. And I promise you, everything that we do together there is raising up everything else. So thank you so much for that. And thank you for your patience, because I build the website myself. I load the files. I do the FTP transfers. I, you know, do the hosting. I design the pages. I write it. I dream it up. I write it. Comes through my guides to me. It takes a lot of time, and I'm working around the clock. So thank you, everybody, for your patience. If you have any questions for Metatron, it would be ideal if you would email them to me. Some of you email me at Galactic Roundtable, and that's not really a good idea because I limit myself and I don't use that email. Right now I have 1,192 unanswered emails in my Galactic Roundtable email on the social site. What is better is if you email me at my personal email. And if you don't have that, the address is belikebethtruetwin@gmail.com. BTRUTWIN@gmail.com. Email me there. Put in the subject line Metatron. That way when I do a search of my email, I can go back to today's date and get all the new questions. Sometimes, if you have another question for Metatron, there's only two really good places to put those questions, either in the comments on the blog or in my personal email. If you send it to me anywhere else, chances are I'm going to miss it or lose it. You have to understand, in order to write the document, which usually tends to be 30 pages or so, to put on the Galactic Roundtable, I have to copy and paste every single question. And now Ning has changed how they do things, so I can't even highlight the whole page anymore. I have to go through and highlight each question and pull each question one at a time into a 30-page document and then go through. So that's what has held me up in the past when I get off, off schedule. Now that we've moved the house and everything, I feel that I'm settled in and I should be able to do the questions every Wednesday, just like we're doing tonight. So I know these questions are dear to your heart and they're very important to you and you've been waiting. And I just wanted to give you guys an idea of what the holdups were. So what I'd like to do now is read to you just a portion of the questions and answers of what I can get through, probably for the next 20 minutes. And the questions and answers are complete, but we won't be able to get through all of them. And so I will post them tomorrow with a new reading from Archangel Metatron. He wants to talk to us about the full moon spring equinox. I call it spring in the United States. He wants to talk to us about the full moon equinox, solstice,
And then I will post these questions and answers there. And then in the comments is the most ideal place to put your new question. I thank you so much for your patience in waiting for these, and I thank you for your continued support. Just let me take some water, please. Okay, I'm just looking because I'm on the wrong page. Just one second. All right, here we are. I want to share the reading that Lord Metatron gave us on March 9th before I start the question, because this was channeled the day before the earthquake. And now that it's a day, and now that the earthquake happened a day later, I feel the channeling will have much more significance. And I think this may have been missed because, the next day we were all in complete shock. So let me read this to you again. This was channeled on March 9th. Greetings, this is Lord Metatron. I would like to welcome you to this broadcast today, the first day of the Unity Wave. It is a wonderful time of vast changes. Today found us on Soltech's mothership, the Phoenix. We were joined by Lord Ashtar, Mother Sekhmet, Father Alcyon, and the President of the Milky Way Galaxy, Lord Salvington. Others of the Intergalactic Confederation of Worlds were there as well. We met at Galactic Center, 26 degrees Sagittarius. The purpose for this meeting was a joining together of energies to launch the Unity Consciousness Wave. We, Creator Gods, moved energies to reset the Earth to 5D. A universal underworld, in reference to the Mayan calendar tradition, which originated with the Kumaras, handed down from the Mayahans in India to the Mayan clan in South America, is any dimensional world existing below the 100th dimension. This was when the Mayans migrated southwest during a past wartime. We are riding the wave of a dimensional shift which causes all that is not in unity consciousness to shift its physicality from one dimension to another. This means all creatures, all cellular life, all incarnate souls will either choose to embrace unity consciousness and project their physicality onto 5D Earth, or they will project their physicality onto another apparently identical Earth in a lower dimension. When we anchor in the force field on Earth to raise it to the higher dimension, it will change in an instant. One minute it will be in 3D, and the next it will be at zero point in no time. This force field is initiated by Captain Ashtar from the bridge of the New Jerusalem. Today we were on the Phoenix with Commander Soltek in charge of all communications, as well as the gatekeeper for Galactic Center, Lord Salvington. We today initiated beams of cosmic energy pulsing out from the mothership Phoenix that will shift the timeline of 3D Earth so it can move away from 5D Earth. Event timelines on 3D Earth will continue with all non-criminals who have chosen to continue with lessons in duality. those who have chosen unity consciousness will seamlessly continue on fifth dimensional Earth. The cosmic energies will have an effect on your physical body. It also has an effect on Earth and all celestial bodies in this galaxy. This is attuning, raising the etheric octave where you vibrate, and that is what controls your form, physical and etheric projects. Those of lower vibration have no choice but to stay on 3D Earth, and those who have acclimated to a higher vibration will evolve to the new universal underworld of unity consciousness, fifth dimensional Earth. The Mayan calendar is a codex. It is the universal divine blueprint for all life. Form in the matter universe is created with light and sound. When combined is the force. It is this cosmic energy which animates all life. The unity consciousness wave, which was initiated today from the Phoenix Mothership by the Galactic Federation, pulses out a new energy of nine. The pulse count measures as a metronome keeps a pattern. We are shifting away from the age when we count pulses 13 times 20. As of today, the cosmic pulses come in patterns of 9 by 9. Completion. It is the basis of all life on fifth dimensional Earth. It is this pulse of 9 times 9, where living beings exist in the fifth dimension. It has changed the entire atmosphere of the galaxy. The galactic and planetary stargates will be reprogrammed to the new energetic codes. Nothing that is vibrating slower than fifth dimension will be able to traverse the cosmic codes of the Milky Way galaxy. The same process will happen again when Earth evolves in the 12th dimension. To describe the new cosmic energy commence this day, imagine a... I need a sip of water, thank you. Imagine a water wheel on a river. Each time a paddle turns on the wheel and dives under the water, it pulses waves of energy seen on the surface of the water. The waves pulse out in unending fractals. The fractals contain the frequency patterns of light and sound from the 100th dimension and descend into fifth dimensional Earth, pulling Gaia Vaivamas higher into the dimensions. Only now this becomes possible. The Mayan calendar was coded messages left behind by the original Kumaras who came to Earth aeons ago to show the path back at the end of the grand experiment. It has always been known the way back. The plan has always been in place since the last destruction of the final war period of Earth. It was agreed by those who created it how it would end, under what circumstances. There is a science to it, and it functions in the base of love. Those creators got together today, this marked day and time on this timeline, which is ending now. Together, they combined their energy to pulse out the divine, orgasmic love from the 100th dimension, in unending fractals pulsing down in a rhythm that creates fifth dimensional Earth. This energy was channeled through the bodies of incarnate souls on Earth living in the Matrix. Millions who were planted there for just this event. They carried the energy into the center core of the Earth, the energy from the 100th dimension. You have been feeling this. This energy will greatly support the cries for freedom being heard in all corners of this world. Many of you are experiencing mixed emotions, physical dullness, technical and mechanical failures, as well as delays. There is no turning back now. You will see the effects of these continuous and never-ending cosmic pulses until one moment we enter no time at zero point. To borrow an old expression from Earth, the time is now. You are loved beyond belief, and you are never alone. This is Metatron. Now, everybody, we have about 10 minutes to the end of the program, and so I'm going to read a sampling of the questions, and if there's any reason you've submitted a question, let's say in the last 8 weeks, and you're still wanting the answer, and I somehow missed it, it may have been because I packed up all the belongings of, you know, my house, me and a family, lived in another place for a month with our things in storage and unpacked them, and I'm still looking at boxes in some of the rooms. So things have been topsy-turvy for me, and there are no questions that I've received that I know of that I haven't answered. If I have, submit them again into my btrutwin@gmail.com. There's no questions I've turned away. I think there's only been twice when someone has asked maybe 11 questions and I, you know, answered maybe 5 instead of 11. So, you know, ask a question this week and hold off and ask some more the next week. Anyways, here we go. Thank you, everybody. Hello, Beth and Metatron. Thanks for the unconditional service. I'm so grateful. I feel dragged down from a closest family member, but he has a great soul. Remember, everybody, I think some of these questions are international and English isn't the first language, but I'm reading it as is. Time to time, I have an urge that I have to end the relationship with him. I was wondering, this is my contract to overcome and spend life with him. Metatron says, we are at a time when it is important to seek to end relationships which are not healthy for our growth. This sometimes seems almost impossible. It is selfish to the other person to continue fruitless relationships. It is selfish to your twin flame to do so. This person says in their question, I have very strong connection to the Southwest New Mexico. I feel that I have to move. Metatron replies, Santa Fe, New Mexico is the Earth headquarters of the Galactic Federation. When it is time to move, you will feel you can do nothing else but go there. This person says, I have a strong feeling with Atan. Please tell me what my origins. Your origins are at Sirius. The Sirian civilization came to Egypt during the Golden Age, and Atan is the source of creation. And that was for Umso. This next question is from Felix. Hi, Beth. Here are my questions for Lord Metatron. Is my sister Gracie going to recover from her chronic health issue? Metatron says, your sister Gracie is suffering from a filtration problem. She will continue to have flare-ups. When she is ready, she will recover completely. It is her choice, and she is not aware she has this choice. Her illness is teaching much to the loved ones around her as well as the strangers she meets along the way. In her healing, she will heal many others. Felix also says, what are the green and yellow patterns that I see pulsing all around me, like a concentric flower, when I move into open-eyed, deep meditation state? And Metatron says, This is the force you are seeing. This is the energy of the divine blueprint for creation. As you focus on the energy, see if you can move it with your thoughts. It is this energy, as you learn to be it, that it will show you your other siddhas. This is from Julie. Hello to both of you, Beth and Metatron. After reading what others wrote, I felt I might have other questions. What are my origins, which planet, and past lives? What is my role in this great journey of ascension? Your origin is Andromeda. You are a healer there. Your role is as a counselor. You will guide others. Speak with your angels to explore these details. Number two, my ex and I can't stop the love, but it's unhealthy for me. For some reason, I can't seem to let go no matter what he has done and what he does to me. He can't let go either. Is he my twin flame? What is my role with him? What should I do? As your ex holds on to you, he does this out of laziness. Also, fear of being alone. He is using you. When you stay with him, you are not being fair to your twin flame. No one can meet their twin flame if they are in a relationship that is not healthy. Everybody will meet their twin flame when they have prepared. Julie says, I want to thank you for your answers you gave me and for the ones you will give me. I love you both dearly, and I thank you for this opportunity you give to all of us. I know I had a lot of questions. Sorry. She did. She had a few others, and I didn't include them. You can ask them again, Julie. This one is from Susri Jane. Hello to both of Beth and Metatron. After reading what others wrote, I felt I might have other questions. Oh, this isn't hers. Let's see. Oh, I'll have to sort. I'm going to sort that one out. Let me skip on to the next one. This is from Heather. Is my major mission after ascension to help humanity heal with my Arcturian energies? I feel I am also from Sirius B working with Mother Sekhmet. Also, I feel very strongly my ashram is you, Saint Germain, and Katumi. Lastly, I feel excited, hoping to work with my twin flame Mabri, waiting in the ships. Much love and namaste, Heather. Heather, you will gain, this is Metatron speaking, you will gain much by practicing the Arcturian light healing technique. This will add much to your life. Through it, is though it is to enhance, but not be the main focus of your work. You are a spiritual warrior who has served at Sirius B, guarding the Sirians from renegade forces, trying to take over Sirius at the time of the Orion Wars and since then. You will see your twin flame very soon and continue having telepathy with him. Let's see. The next one says, can't thank you enough for this divine service. Much love to you, Lord Metatron. Is Naomi my twin flame or possibly a soulmate? This comes from Tom. Also, if Lord Metatron has any advice for my journey. Peace, Tom. And Metatron says, I advise you pose this question to Naomi. It is something the two of you should explore together for your mutual development. You have been struggling with dissatisfaction at work. I suggest you explore new work. You will know, you know what it is. It is what makes you so happy. I think we have time for one more question, everybody. This is from Cosmo Kane.
I'm glad Metatron didn't answer my question about money until now, because I had to find the answers within myself. I'm glad I started to use the resurrection flame, but I still want an answer from Lord Metatron. Can you tell me how can I attract more money? Should I continue with internet market strategies? And Metatron says, the marketing strategies on the internet will be more effective if they are more personalized. You have not found the hook. Even then, you may have more success with another approach. And he asks, will I find business owners that I could help them with marketing strategies after I move to a new town? I have to admit that I find it hard to let go of expectations, but I will continue to work on myself, especially with the tools from TELUS Book 3. Metatron says, your ambiguity stems from the fact that your life will change greatly when you move. You will meet new friends and discover new interests, if you allow it. Continue to clean and clear your environment and your heart, and these pursuits will bring the desired changes to you. So in the end, Lord Metatron, what advice do you have for me regarding the subject of money? Metatron says, it is an old expression and very true. Do what you love, the money will come. And then Cosmo Kane says, thank you from Cosmo Kane. So that's it, everybody. We're at the end of our time. Thanks a lot for being here. And I'll see you next week. Send your questions in. I don't have a phone pulled up and I don't have any service, so I'm just going to sign off tonight. Good night, everybody. Thanks for being here.